Welcome to Milkmaids Podcast, the unconventional homesteading podcast. I'm Stephanie from Wyoming.
And I'm Tara from Montana. Join us each week as we take a deep dive into an inclusive homesteading topic from canning, dairy animals, gardening, animal husbandry, and everything in between.
Hey, Tara.
Hey, December already.
Seriously, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Not because I don't have any proclivities towards December at all, but that much closer to babies.
I know. When you get that close, though, then it really goes by slowly.
Well, I'm hoping it's going to go quick because you know, like, all the chaos that comes with holidays then.
Oh, no, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't.
Right? Not when you're pregnant?
Yeah.
It's, like, miserable.
Right. At the end, you're like, I need to take a nap. And then your day drags on for months. Every day is one
Every day is a month. Yeah. That is what it feels like currently. So.
End of pregnancy is super fun.
Yeah, it totally is. Anyhow, speaking of that, which has nothing to do with anything else, who are we shouting out today?
Our shout out this week goes to Southern Exposure Seed Exchange. And Southern Exposure Seed Exchange has a mission to really drive people to participate in cooperative self-reliance in an agriculture setting. They offer heirloom varieties of endangered species, open pollinated seeds to encourage seed saving and seed sharing, and disease and insect tolerant species to cut down on the use of pesticides or herbicides. They offer over 800 varieties of vegetable, herb, flower, grain, and cover crop seeds, which I think a lot of people miss.
That's a ton.
Cover crops as being important, but that's something I'm always shopping for because it really does add nutrients to your soil.
I did cover crops for the first time this year.
Yeah, you like it?
Only in one little patch just because I wanted to see how it goes.
Yeah, it's a good experiment.
Because our winters are so harsh and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, we did rye.
I've done clover in the past and been really, really happy with it.
Yeah.
So what makes Southern Exposure Seed Exchange stand out in my mind is the fact that they are a worker-run cooperative in which each individual that works there has a voice in the company, and they all receive equal compensation, which is so rare in companies, but so powerful. Every person who works here wants the best for the company and for their customers. They are located in Virginia on a 72-acre farm that encompasses hay fields, an extensive garden, of course, goats, chickens, and herb gardens galore.
That's cool. They're diversified too.
Yeah, they really are. So when you buy from them, you're not buying from like one monoculture seed company. It's really diversified, and they have knowledge of these seeds because they're actually growing them and harvesting the seeds themselves.
Right.
These seeds are especially suited to the Southeast, so our Southeast listeners, definitely check them out. They do have a catalog. And I'm a sucker for a good catalog, like a good seed catalog. You can't beat it.
Yeah, they're the best.
And it's so freaking cute. I'm telling you. They feature little gnomes on the cover. So I'm all about it. All about the gnome life. So.
Oh, my God.
And you can request a catalog on their website. It's southernexposure.com. It will be in our show notes. And I was just looking through their online catalog, and I was surprised by how much they have. And they even offer plugs of yellow oyster mushroom spawns.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool? It's really hard to find somebody that offers seeds, but also fungi.
Right. Well, yeah, because they're usually fairly removed from each other as far as the people who are
doing it,
interested in one or the other, usually aren't the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I really like it. And their pictures are just great. So if you're wanting to investigate the plant, I hate drawings of plants like for pictures.
In catalogs, do you?
I like them in the catalogs, but when I go to the website and I'm looking for something, I want a real ass picture. I don't want a cartoon drawing.
Do not send Tara real ass pictures, please.
I don't like them.
You just opened a whole can of worms.
I'm sorry. It's just how I talk.
My gosh.
So great photos. And if you're looking for special seeds, go ahead and give them a look. And you know, the holidays are coming up. So get your partner some seeds, get somebody that you like some seeds. Do it.
Yeah. That's actually a really good gift, isn't it?
Yeah. Because
we should normalize that.
Normalize seed gift giving.
Right.
Put it on a shirt.
And like the thing about that is you could, well, maybe I shouldn't out myself. You could just have a box of seeds. You need a present.
Right.
Boom.
People do that all the time. I saw something on TikTok, of course, because that's all I do apparently, is that this person, every time they see something throughout the year that reminds them of somebody, they'll buy it. And then they have like boxes with that person's name on it, and then they have an automatic gift for a birthday or a holiday.
Oh,
you could do that with seeds.
You could. Yes. I'm so bad at gifts in general, even like holidays, because if I saw it for you and I think you would like it, I have an inability to hold on to that item until a specific right. date.
Yes.
Yeah. But if it was just like a generic
seed.
Yeah. Like I have this whole box of seeds and when the opportunity arises, then I put thought into, would you prefer corn or parsley?
Yeah.
You know, are you a corn person a good idea. Or a parsley person?
Right.
I like it. All right. Now that we've solved everybody's we've gifting solved problems.
Your issues again, once again.
If you'd like to solve our gifting problems, you can email us at milkmaidspodcast@gmail.com. You can reach us at Milkmaids Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. What else? Please rate, review, subscribe. That really helps us out.
Mention something about Belgium.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to. This is important. This is big news, everyone.
Everybody has to know.
We are ranked number 85 on Apple Podcasts in Belgium. So that's pretty big news. Hi, Belgium.
Hi, Belgium. Who would have thought?
I'm surprised we're allowed in Belgium, honestly, but you know.
Only the rebels in Belgium listen to us.
Good job, Belgium rebels.
We're allowed. I'm surprised we're allowed there.
I don't know how it works.
Oh my gosh.
So what podcasts have you been listening to lately, Stephanie? I know we've mentioned this before, but we're not into like, we sound so cloudy when we say, I don't listen to farm podcasts.
Well, here's the thing. So this is Tandra. Do you expect anything else? I was in the fabric store yesterday.
As one does.
We don't listen to podcasts. Well, speaking of that, I was in the fabric store.
That makes total sense.
Yesterday and picking out fabric for a project for my new baby, right? And I had asked the lady, like, is this the only kid's prints or whatever? And she had found out or knew that we farmed. I can't remember how that even came up. So she's like, oh, but did you see all the farm fabric over there? And there was. Yeah. There was a lot of cute farm fabric, right? Before I got into farming super heavy, my whole house was decorated farm.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I had the first baby, her nursery was decorated farm. And at some point, it became so overwhelming. Like, no retreat from it. Right. It's like, you're nonstop farming outside. You come inside, your whole house is farming. Your kid is all farming.
Yeah.
So no, we don't. That's the same thing. No, we don't listen to podcasts that are farming.
No.
It's too much.
Right. I can only talk about cow vulvas so much.
Right. Right. I don't listen. It's not that I don't listen to some.
I do every once in a while. Yeah.
I actually kind of like listening to ones that are like farming adjacent more than.
Yeah.
Or like I listen to Mike Badger's Pastured Poultry Talk.
Uh-huh.
But that one's like so in depth on pastured poultry.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting to me because it's like that next step. Or I listen to ones that are like about fermenting or canning or, you know what I mean? Like right. things that are like kind of adjacent a little
right.
bit. But that is the only farming I listen to.
What about just in general?
Others? Podcasts? Man, I've got so many that I kind of keep up on. So like every week I'll listen to
right.
one. I'm not binging one at this very moment, much to my dismay, because that's my favorite thing to do. But one of my favorites is probably True Crime Garage.
Oh, yeah. You were saying mm-hmm. that. I haven't got into that one yet.
It depends on what level you like things at. They're like morbid. And I know you like morbid, too. That's yeah. the other one that we like as well. Anyways, they're both of them are very like no details spared. The research is really well done.
Yeah.
Whereas some people like more of a surface level true crime. I get that, right. too. That's not True Crime Garage.
Okay. I'll yeah. have to listen to them then.
I think you'd like it.
Probably.
They're male, but they're woke AF.
Okay. Yeah. When you say chill. Male, then I'm I like, know.
Male no. talking about women getting murdered.
Okay. I'll check them out. Thank you for the recommendation. Yeah.
Who are you listening to? Why do you ask me things? It should have been a 2-word answer.
That's what three my word, favorite.
True Crime Garage. That's all I had to say.
Our podcast good. It's good. It's good. You're like, rambling. Anyway, I was in the fabric
Speaking
store
of fabric.
And I like murder podcasts. That's what I like. It makes sense to me.
I'm a
we
very
got there.
Complicated person.
We got there.
Oh my God.
So
how about you?
I've been listening to Radio Rental.
I haven't even heard of that.
It's really, really good. And I don't usually like podcasts that are kind of like rehearsed. And this isn't, but the host is he's Dwight from The Office, but he plays this character. And he does a really good job at creepy like people. He's really good at creepy right. people. And he does a really Weird. Good job opening up. And then it's real stories told by people that actually like recorded themselves that are really creepy. Like
oh.
one guy narrowly missed being killed by a female serial killer. And this other one like narrowly missed being killed by his neighbor. It's a whole thing. Anyway, it's really, oh, really weird. Good. I really like stories that are told by people who survived something or were adjacent to some awful rhyme. And that really fills my need for that while I'm doing dishes or milking a cow. Like,
we're so weird.
We're weird, weird people, yes.
We're so weird.
But Radio Rental is good.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to check it out.
That's what I've been listening to.
Yeah, we're really, we like to farm. But that is, I mean, that's what I listen to when I milk my cow too.
Yeah.
Not Radio Rental, but like true crime. Yeah.
Sometimes I just need it. I just need to feel like a normal person. Is that what normal people do?
I don't think that classifies you as normal, but.
It's an escape from.
Yes.
The farming aspect of it.
Yeah. And sometimes you need that.
Yeah.
And like, you can't listen to, well, I'm not going to tell you how to parent. I don't personally listen to my murder podcast on Alexa when I'm doing the dishes with my kids here. You know what
I mean? Right. No, so I don't do that either.
Milking the cow is like the perfect opportunity.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I have Bluetooth headphones, so I play with my kids and listen to murder podcasts because I have that mental distraction, which I need in order to play with my kids, which sounds horrible.
No.
But yeah, it's just who I am as a person. I have to think of seven things at the same time.
Otherwise you're not fulfilled.
Yeah. Yes, I get it. Anyway, what's been going on your farm this week?
I don't think anything remarkable. I really need to go back. There was a point in time in which I took detailed notes on this because I was kind of paralyzed by the fear of being not on knowing. Microphone and everything else. Right.
But we're number 85 in Belgium. So... We're doing really good. We're
professionals.
Right.
So, yeah, and then I stopped writing it down. So now I'm like, what did happen? Nothing too major. I did make a bunch of arrangements with a bunch of customers because the pigs are going in on Monday.
Awesome.
So that's exciting.
Hey, have you been training them to the trailer?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
I think they'll get right on, though.
Well, yeah, they should. My experience thus far, and this may be completely off base because I'm definitely not the pig person, the wilder the pig, the quicker they get on the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always been my experience too.
I mean, like, are the lazy Amishan cross?
Yeah.
That Brian had to lift him up. He had access to that trailer for like 3 weeks and he just couldn't be bothered.
No.
Could not. And it was like I never once saw him even look in the trailer. Like, he just couldn't even
bother.
He's like,
that's fine. I won't eat.
Mm-hmm. But the Tamworths, who used to drive me flipping insane because they were so wild, he was on there in like 3 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
So anyhow, these ones are on the wild side. So I think it's going to be fine. This is my working theory.
Yeah. And they seem really food driven too.
Yes.
So, and the nice thing is that you have a milk cow and you can just throw milk on there if they're going to be a pain and they'll get right on. So I don't think you're going to have a problem. Let me figure out your problems. I like how I made this my problem now. And I'm like, you have to do it this way.
Right.
I'm taking over your role here.
Oh, well, pigs, I need that because especially these pigs. I'm going to be like, I mean, especially being pregnant, like Brian, you're up, Brian.
Yeah.
Just
your turn.
Which is good. Yeah. We've actually had really good luck with loading pigs after the first time.
Yeah.
The first time we did almost get a divorce.
You know, the first time is always the worst.
You pig. Just expect it to go differently.
Pig loading virgins have a hard time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not worried about the pig loading at all, actually. So
that's good.
What else? I don't think anything too remarkable. I've been monitoring Virgie's production really heavily yesterday, but not taking it too seriously. Today I was pretty in tune with it because if she did not settle calf, she should be coming in to heat on Thursday. So in two more days, day and a half. Anyhow, she usually drops a little bit in production a couple days before, and then as you get closer it drops more and more and more.
Yeah,
but her levels are the same, so that's about it. Though I'm still pregnant, so taking a fairly hands-off approach on anything exciting,
right? Which you should be doing anyway.
It's fine. Kind of drives me crazy sometimes, but it's fine. How about you?
So it's been quiet since the big windstorm, which is kind of nice, honestly.
You need that.
Yeah. So I've been doing a lot of inside things, and the vet will be out Monday, and I plan to get like some pictures and just give people an idea of what like owning a dairy cow is and what vet visits look like for us.
Yeah.
And again, we're pretty lucky because our vet is pretty hands-on and responsive to me and loves working with dairy cows. So that's great.
That's huge.
And I just think we've reached that point of winter where it's like a holding pattern. It's just pretty normal for us in the winter, and everyone's doing good. Everyone's got bedding. So everyone's just hanging tight for spring, which is good.
Yeah. When you live somewhere, I know basically everywhere has some degree of seasonality.
Yeah.
Some places you do different farming things in the, you know, per the season, but in the climates that you and I live in, it's fairly limiting as far as what you can overpower the weather on.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it does just shut down. And you know what? That's important. And before I became a farmer, I hated winter. I hated the cold, hated the snow, wanted no part of it. And it might be my favorite season.
Right.
Since I became a farmer. Because it is that, like, I mean, you're going sun up to sundown, sometimes hours before and hours after, all year, except for the winter.
Right.
And you get, you know, the weather kind of forces. I'm high strung enough that if the weather didn't force me into taking a break, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Just like a natural break in the cycle, I guess. I love it.
Yeah. I think it's important. So
that transitions well again. What is our main topic this week, Stephanie?
We're nailing it. So we are going to talk about the best protein sources for a homestead, which I wrote the outline. So get ready.
Right.
This should be, because I'm sure people have seen this. When I started this, I expected to be like, all right, now on our countdown, number five is blah, 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 blah. And this
is both kind of had that idea.
Yeah. Number four. Right. Of course, I could not make it that simple.
No. No, but I love it.
I started researching it and just realized that, like, go find those countdowns. They're out there.
Okay.
Everyone's done a countdown, right? Right. I want to talk about the things that aren't necessarily talked about in those countdowns, the bigger picture of it. And I think that's important, and hopefully people find it interesting. If not, let us know. If you like it, let us know. Here we go. Either way, buckle up.
You have to listen anyway.
Do not take your headphones out.
Right.
So part of the thing too with this deal is that when you think about protein, like, I feel like our culture of, like, working out and exercising and what our physical bodies should be can be kind of all consuming, especially for our age range. And I feel like I'm always getting ads, or like my friends are always like, oh, I took the protein shake, so now that I took the protein shake, I've got to do this workout or whatever. And I think that it's very easy to correlate the word protein with strictly muscle or muscle building or strength, right? We need protein to be strong. But protein's actually kind of a much bigger, much more important entity in our bodies than anything to do with working out, right? So protein is found throughout our entire body. There's over 10,000 different types of proteins that make you, and it makes up a ton of chemical processes that help our body to function. And like we just talked about muscle, but for example, it's also part of hemoglobin, and that carries oxygen around your body, right? So like that's super important. Protein is made up of 20 basic building blocks called amino acids. And these amino acids are either synthesized in our bodies or sourced from food, and they don't come from anywhere else. In the context of what we're talking about today, there's 9 amino acids that have to come from food alone. Your body cannot synthesize it. So those amino acids then combine to make protein. So
how much protein do we need? The National Academy of Medicine recommends 0.8 grams of protein for every kilogram of body weight per day. So for a 140-pound person, that's 50 grams of protein per day. There is what's called a protein package. This is basically looking at what other nutrients are coming in with the protein source. Say you eat a steak, you're getting fats too, for example. Research is showing that there is more of a correlation between protein packages and health than simply protein amount. For links and more info on this idea, we'll have the Harvard link in our show notes, so check that out.
It's very detailed.
Yeah, for sure. It's a Harvard paper for sure. There's a lot of protein intake and overall health that is either too complicated for this simple podcast or isn't well understood yet. Nutrition is a really complex thing, and our understanding changes frequently. Think back to the days of sugar-free or fat-free everything. And we talked about this before, like calories, low calories. Well, what does that even mean, you know?
Right.
It drives me insane.
Why is that beneficial?
Both fat and sugar have been shown to not be the problem with our nutrition. Obviously, moderation, but we aren't nutritionalists, so again, don't sue us. That's always a good saying. What we do know is that everyone needs protein. Too little protein, especially in developing children, can cause irreversible damage. Failure to grow, loss of muscle mass, decreased immunity, weakening of the heart, even death. The list goes on. Protein is very important.
Yeah, so that brings us to like what are good sources of protein, just in general, homesteading or not. So everyone tends to think that proteins just come from meat, and like it's true, but that's like meat does have protein, but that's just one source of it. And there's so many other things that are frequently forgotten about. So in the category of plant matter, there's an entire list, but a quick and dirty version. Legumes top the list every time. Lentils, beans, peas, edamame, soybeans, nuts and seeds. I feel like everybody forgets about those. Almonds, yeah. Pistachios, cashews, walnuts, hazelnuts, pecans, hemp seeds, squash and pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, whole grains, wheat, quinoa, rice, millet, oats, buckwheat, and then veggies, of course, like corn, broccoli, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, artichokes. Spinach. In all of those things I just mentioned, there's more. Those are just a couple of top hitters. And then obviously meats have protein. Poultry, chicken, turkeys, duck, quail, guineas, seafood, fish, crustaceans, mollusks, etc. And then red meat, which beef, pork, lamb, veal, mutton, goat, and rabbit all fall under. Another thing that's frequently forgotten about is dairy.
Yeah.
So milk, and then all of, obviously milk, all of the constituents, right? Cream, yogurt, buttermilk, cheese, cottage cheese, the list goes on. And then in the homesteading realm, especially eggs are also an important source. So this list is easily found on most of our homesteads, like all of those things that I just rambled off to one degree or another. I feel like people always focus on the meat aspect of protein, but I'm guessing if you took a moment with a pen and paper and wrote down all of the food sources on your farm, you would have way more than you think, most likely.
Right.
And even like what came to mind immediately for me and an item that I didn't think about is sunflowers. And I know you grow a shit ton of sunflowers.
I do.
Like sunflower seeds, right? Like that's a huge source of protein that neither one of us probably would have came out and said if someone asked you, where's your protein coming from on your farm, right?
Like, and you could even take it a step further and sprout those seeds and eat those sprouts. Like there's endless possibilities.
Right. So my guess is you probably have more than you think.
So how to choose which protein sources fit best on your homestead. First, you'll want to look at a list like the one we've provided, or like the list from John Hopkins on protein content of certain foods. So from there, start a new list of items that you could even produce in your area. For example, where Steph lives, it's way too cold for almost all nut trees, so nuts are just not viable for her. And also, Wyoming is not known for its crustacean production, so she's going to have to look into other things. Take some time to research your area. Look to other farms, even large-scale farms. Do you have a hazelnut operation down the road from you? Great, that means you can grow them too. And we have a, I guess it's like a hydroponic shrimp place really close to where I live. Yeah, it's big, big deal. They're building a plant for these shrimpies, and they taste delicious, and they're very clean.
Are you serious?
Hydroponic things too, yes.
We really should. I did a whole hydroponic experiment in like a 10-gallon aquarium with goldfish once.
Did it work out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, great lettuce.
Okay.
It just didn't have the attention
focus
to expand it, but
I'm really interested in it. It's just that the time?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to hyper-focus on it someday, I'm sure.
I'm adding that to our list of topics right now so we don't forget.
Oh, good.
That's our MO.
Once you identified what is even possible, you can look at it from a couple different directions. First, you want to focus on food items that you like and are willing to eat. If you're not willing to eat it, don't even bother. Next, you want to look at things like infrastructure and cost. What?
Aquaponies. It auto-corrected. Aquaponics to aquaponies.
What is that even?
And now all of our listeners will be tuning in for an episode on aquaponies. So help me God.
Bless. Okay, bless. Sorry. It's going to be a first. That's a world's first aquaponies podcast episode.
Especially from a farming
podcast. Oh, aquaponies. Oh, good. Oh, good.
Good. Sorry. I couldn't hold that one in.
It's really funny. Next, you want to look at things like infrastructure and cost. What do you need to grow these things? Fences, barns, processors, a chunk of land, water source, the list goes on. With infrastructure comes cost, both for the infrastructure and the item itself. For example, the financial investment into a single cow is significantly more than a single little chicken. Yes, you get more protein, but you still need to work within your limits while you build your own homestead. And everyone's different. We don't know your needs and what your capabilities are. So lastly, what is it you want to do? Maybe you hate the commitment of taking care of animals. I have a lot of friends who absolutely refuse to wake up and milk a cow or a goat. That's perfectly fine. your focus for your homestead is going to be more plant-based. There are a ton of options for that. Get good at preserving too, so you can have supplies all year. Or maybe you love cows, but you can't stand pigs. Just be realistic and honest with yourself. If you set yourself up for success based on what you want versus what you should or shouldn't do, you'll have a much more successful and long-lasting operation. Throw the whole YouTube out. Because...
just straight out the door. The entire straight out the YouTube. Door. Oh my gosh.
The homestead videos that are available to you, like, really romanticize a lot of it. Because they get more likes. Or they make it, like, more dreadful than it. Like, it's just not realistic. It's most TV show now.
Most of those people have hired help, too.
Yeah, or they pay to come help them.
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, hired. Yeah, by hired, I meant...
people pay to come, air right. quote, learn from them.
Yeah, so, and, like, some of those YouTube people, you know, it's a great source to learn a visual component of something. But I guess the biggest point is just don't try and, like... force yourself into that standard. Yeah.
Because everyone's family is different. Every single person is different. So you need to follow what you think you're capable of.
Totally. And what you enjoy and what you'll enjoy consuming as well. So
that being said, let us tell you how to do it.
So, what do we recommend? Since there's so many variables that we can't possibly know and accommodate for each and every single listener, we're just going to look at, like, the average American for our recommendations. And by this word average, I'm specifically talking about, like, a small family with all parties in the family interested in sharing the work and the reward. The family has a small to moderate amount of land, say like 5 to 10 acres. Family also has a moderate amount of income, and we're going to assume that they enjoy raising and eating all of our recommendations because it's our podcast and we can say that.
Yeah.
We this make is the what rules you're going to eat.
Yeah.
Pretend family.
Yeah.
So we'd recommend with starting with a well-rounded source. So a little bit of all, kind of, meaning orchard, gardens, meats, eggs, and milk, which milk,
asterisk, questionable.
Yeah.
Next asterisk, to the milk.
To be discussed later. I'm a huge proponent of an orchard. There's just nothing easier than an orchard right. in a lot of respects. So however many nut trees can be supported and utilized, I'd get right on that if I were you. The nice thing about orchard trees is that you pay for them once and you plant them once, and the rest is really easy. There's little bits of maintenance, but that kind of varies by your location. So we always recommend also doing a little bit each year. Don't stress yourself out with, like, I have to get 50 trees in.
Yeah.
No, do 5 this year and 5 next year or whatever.
And then I like that too, because then you can focus on those 5 for that year, because I'm terrible
yeah.
at watering them. But if yeah. I only have 5, like, anyone can do that.
Right.
Instead right. of 1,000 trees.
Yeah, totally. And my secret hack on trees or orchard trees, because everybody, spoiler alert, everybody's terrible at watering them. If you can get one of those cheap little timers and have it just set up.
Oh yeah.
Have the water just set up to go. Like
yeah.
it's, that really makes it as easy as
right.
planting them and not looking at them again. They're just great for the lack of care that they need once they're established. So for a single example of a tree, so like there's 20 grams of protein in a single cup of hazelnuts, which
that's
is
amazing.
Impressive, because if anybody's right. had, well, right. So I'm from Oregon, where hazelnuts are grown like
I didn't everywhere. Know that.
Oh my gosh. At least where the parts of Oregon, like where my grandparents still live, it's like hazelnut orchard.
Wow, that's cool. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, if you've ever eaten, you know, it's like homegrown, I guess, but like local hazelnuts, it's like eating a couple cup of hazelnuts is no big deal. So 20 grams, that's nearly half the amount needed for a 140 pound person, which is a huge bang for your buck.
Right. And they're easy to store too.
Yeah, super easy. So mm-hmm. yeah, anyways, nuts, go in on that. Garden, there's almost no reason not to have a garden of some sorts. Especially for our make-believe family, they've got a beautiful little garden plot on their 5-acre farm.
Yeah, and they mm-hmm. all the kids help, and they don't step they on do. Any of the seedlings.
And they've never once eaten a green tomato.
Never.
Yep.
They're perfect children.
But don't forget, even if you live in an apartment, if you have a window or a balcony, you have a spot for a single container to grow plants. That's really all you need to do one part of it. So
yeah, and if you need inspiration for that, listen back to our gardening types episode. Yeah.
Gardening is just so cheap in comparison to the other protein sources. Like a whole packet of seeds might set you back a couple dollars. And if that's all you have is a couple dollars, fine. Start there, get a pack of seeds, and then save the seeds. And then the next year, you have that type, and then spend another $5 and buy another pack of seeds. So that's kind of the cool thing about gardening, is that it's really, very few people wouldn't qualify for the financial aspect of being able to garden to some degree. And there's more and more places offering a seed library, so you can be on the lookout for plants that you like that are high in protein too. With this episode being about protein, you'll want to look through the lists online of plant matter that you can grow and make choices. So for our make-believe family, I would have them place emphasis on legumes, especially beans, because they have 2 grams per cup, and then balance it out with whatever veggies they enjoy. So like for us, we love broccoli, and that's 2.5 grams per cup, and it's so easy to grow where we live. Asparagus also has to make the recommendation as well, because I refuse to not recommend a perennial.
They're so
I'm
easy.
I'm all about gardening that you do once.
Right.
So asparagus actually has 3 grams of protein per cup. So that all adds up. In most places, gardening's seasonal. And we strongly encourage you guys to invest in yourself and learn preserving techniques, which we did a whole series on this last summer of preserving. So start learning and invest in the equipment. Dehydrating or fermenting might be the cheapest as far as equipment is concerned. But a garden, even if that's not you this year, great. Do a garden and eat it fresh. And then next year, you might be ready to learn another thing. So, and then non-animal meat sources. So eggs are just so easy. We absolutely recommend that you have eggs. They have about 6 grams of protein per egg, which is a lot, especially because most of us will eat a couple.
Yeah.
Eggs a day without thinking much of it. And you don't need much space to raise these laying chickens at all. They can easily be done in the backyard as well. And financially, there's just little investment to them once you have the housing figured out. So the coop can, it depends on your setup, right? Like you might be able to convert an old something or another into a coop. Great. But if you have to build a coop or buy a coop, that part can be kind of expensive. But once you have that, the chickens are really cheap. Feed's usually pretty easy. So,
and then once you have chickens, you have compost as well.
Yeah.
You can always use the droppings for compost.
Yeah. Shit rolls downhill.
Right.
Right. Oh, gosh. So dairy is another one. And this is where the asterisk who we were joking about comes in. Because this dairy is something that I would only recommend for the hardcore enthusiasts. It made our list because Tara and I both love dairy too much to leave it out. And also, it's just way too big of a source of protein not to talk about it at all.
Right. And you have to think again, like back in the day, every single person had a dairy source that they owned to survive. Like it was so important and integral for everyone living, really.
Right.
And specifically European people, that we all had some source of dairy animal. So they saw a really big value in it. And it's just something we've moved away from as a society because it is a lot of work.
Oh, it's a huge amount of work.
Right.
Right. Which is why, it's like the qualifier on this whole thing.
Right.
Dairy is a huge amount of work. It's a huge amount of financial expense, depending on your setup. And both of those are things to absolutely be considered. We've done a ton of dairy episodes. If you're thinking about, if you're toying around with this idea, go ahead and listen or reach out to us with specific questions because we do love talking about it.
Right.
So 1 cup of milk is anywhere from 8 grams of protein up. And the reason I say it this way is because the only milk I could, or the only information I could find was from 3.25% milk at its highest, which is the common like whole milk from the store.
And that's the milk like you get our milk with no cream on it. Zero.
Have you ever drank them in comparison?
I can't drink pasteurized milk.
At all?
No.
Okay. So when we've been dry, I will buy milk and I always buy whole milk. And
And
then going from whole milk to the cow, our cow's milk, it's like going from lettuce to fudge.
That's a good way to describe it.
It's incredible that you think that whole milk is like whole, right? It has a ball. It's really incredible how much lighter it tastes compared to the cow's milk.
Right.
So anyways, I'm guessing, this is really honestly just a guess, I'm guessing that our cow's milk has more than 8 grams of protein in a cup.
I would say so.
Interesting though. So the USDA says that there's 8 grams in a cow's milk, a cup of cow's milk.
Yeah.
Goat's milk, they have it labeled at 9 grams, which I just thought was a little interesting tidbit.
Right.
Yogurt has 11 to 19 grams per cup, if you can believe that. Cottage cheese has 25 grams per cup.
Amazing.
Cheddar cheese has 33 grams per cup.
Well, if you think about it, it's just like literally the water is leaving all of those
it's
things.
It's just condensing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The more water you take out as you go down that list.
Right. It's just more and more.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yogurt's pretty idiot proof. Like if you have a dairy source, yogurt is so easy to make.
Especially with Instant Pots these days.
Yeah. Everyone and you're doubling your protein amount in a single cup. So. Right.
And you make a smoothie for your kid in the morning, good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and like that's what I like about the milk or the dairy component too, is that, say you grow asparagus, right? Because you've read that asparagus has a lot of protein. You can cook that asparagus a few different ways, but at the end of the day, it's asparagus, right? Which I love asparagus. It's fine. Milk. You could have milk or these 27 other products that don't look like milk or taste like milk.
Right. Right.
You know what
and
I
you
mean?
Can Which have it throughout the year. Like you can make cheddar cheese in spring and then you can eat it in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just think milk's very cool. And that's kind of why it got snuck on this list, because it is so diversified.
Yeah.
So if you listen back to our goat versus cow episode in particular, the animals are expensive and they do require a lot of infrastructure. And they're both require quite a financial investment, both in animal and the daily input. So it's not just the cost of the cow, it's the hay and the grain and milking supplies and everything else. Yeah. So it does require a huge amount of time. So they definitely aren't for everybody, but the huge opportunity for protein can't be ignored. They are also converting plant matter that we can't gain any nutrients from, or not much anyways, into food that we can gain nutrients from. And that's pretty impressive. So for example, we can't eat enough grass in the day to sustain our basic bodily function, but cow and goats are able to, and then produce a constant food supply for us. So they are too cool not to talk about, for sure. So now on to what you guys actually came here for, because this is probably more what you were assuming this was going to be about. In no particular order, though, necessarily. Well, I say that. Other than our top pick really is probably poultry in terms of meat. Really chicken, because they're just so dang easy. There's tons of resources on raising chickens, and they're also relatively cheap to get into. So chicken, for example, has 38 grams of protein per cup, which is a lot. And for the sake of continuity, let's just talk about broilers on pasture, which is what Tara and I do. So I'm not talking about your spent laying hens or anything else. Let's just keep it all on the same level. So building a chicken tractor can be anywhere from free, if you have the materials laying around, to a couple $100s. Chicks are usually about $2 or so, and feed for chickens is usually pretty cheap as well. So financially, you're just not into it that much, especially if you're doing like 25 of them or so. Time-wise, it is a daily commitment. Here on our farm, we do twice a day. I know there's some people who do once a day, but whatever you end up doing, it only lasts for 8 weeks start to finish. So you could easily put up a year's worth of chickens in just 8 weeks, which is really kind of nice. Like you can still schedule your vacations around that and just plan on being home for those 8 weeks or what have you. You also don't need much room at all compared to other protein sources like beef and lamb. Many people even run broilers in their backyards. And my favorite part about the broiler as a protein meat source is that you do all the processing by yourself. And you can do that really easily. You don't need to schedule a processor or fight for space, which always seems to be a thorn in my side.
Yeah, I think it's everyone in the US now. It's just so hard to get processing dates now.
Yeah, I was gonna say it didn't seem like other people had that problem until the COVID situation came along, and now it does seem like it's everybody's issue. Yeah. So I'm always a big fan of things you can do by yourself on your own farm. So not to say that you couldn't do a cow, right? But that just requires more equipment and experience. And
I think more facility for sure. Mm-hmm. You've done it, but it's like not something that's super easy.
No, definitely not. So other poultry sources that could be managed similarly as well would be turkey, which is about 40 grams of protein in a cup. Ducks are about 27 grams. Quail is 35 grams.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah. And guineas are about 40 grams, which the source on this 40 grams is sort of sketchy because no one eats guineas. But that was the best of what I could find. I did have to do some tricky math to get there.
You know, somebody asked me, they are specifically looking for guineas to eat, and I'm all about that. She's like, I'm not set up right now, but do you eat yours? And I was like, no, they're just truly for me to enjoy.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, everyone says they're so good. And I believe it.
I've been approached by someone, too, specifically asking for me to raise guineas, like a custom order type of a thing.
Right.
Yeah. I've never had guinea.
It's supposed to be like the deer of the, I don't know, poultry world.
Yeah.
So more like venison, I guess.
Yeah, I have no idea.
If you have ever eaten it, let us know.
But they are easy to raise.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people are doing quail because they also give eggs as well.
And they're ready so soon.
So soon. I didn't realize that. Did you know that you have to like have them in a cage so they don't jump and kill themselves or something like that? Like
I didn't realize there was a reason. Cage. I knew that most people keep them caged.
Yeah, I guess it's because they can jump really high or something and hurt themselves.
Seriously.
Yeah, because if they get too, this is what it is. If they get too much space to jump, they'll get too much force and break their necks off the top.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Okay.
So that's why they're in small cages. Like, wow. Short. They're not actually very small. It's just that they're in short cages. So the more you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Are we ready to talk about the next one?
You love talking about them.
Rabbits. So rabbits are so undervalued as a protein source in the U.S. We do have a rabbit episode scheduled for next year, so we aren't diving into like how to in this episode, but Stephanie had a really hard time finding the conversion on grams to cups of rabbit. So rabbit has 33 grams of protein in a 100-gram serving. And we're bad at grams, I guess, because I can't even envision it, really.
So, well, here's the thing, right? So, I mean, I started to do the math on this.
Yeah.
But how many grams are in a cup?
I don't know.
You can't tell me that information because one is measuring mass and one's measuring volume.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I started into Googling the density of rabbit. Things got a little weird. So what you need to know, listeners, is that rabbits have 33 grams of protein in a 100-gram serving. Comparison, chickens have 27 grams. So they're a little bit more protein dense than chickens.
Okay.
That's really the take home point here. Don't Google density of rabbits.
Just, do you ever think of like, if you die and people go through your phone?
Yes.
I think about that all the time. Because ours would be wild. I'm telling you.
I've told you before, you got to like march your ass over here and delete my history because it's going to be like, what does normal cow vulva discharge look like?
We got best friend like goals or best friend assignments if one of us dies. So yeah, that's what we do.
Normal stuff.
Rabbits slightly take the lead on protein content compared to chicken, but slightly behind in time. So like it averages out to be about the same.
Yeah.
A rabbit of the meat breed varieties can reach 5 pounds in 10 to 11 weeks, which is really impressive.
I was surprised by that.
Yeah. Also similar to chickens, the infrastructure cost is minimal, really looking at the housing and initial purchase, both of which are pretty cheap. Most people use cages for their rabbits. I frequently see these for sale or free on the used pages. That's definitely true. I used to have this book. It was like written back in the 1970s. Not joking. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And you can also build pasture tractors for rabbits that are moved daily. They look very similar to the chicken ones. And this book, I'm going to try and find the title of it. I gave it to somebody else who's raising rabbits because I personally don't eat rabbits. But the tractor was really neat. And it same design and everything. Like you pull it with a rope and then your rabbits get to eat grass. And it was just really, really neat. So
I think that's the way to do it too, because, well, I guess either way you could do it. But if you're doing them on pasture, then they're spreading. But the rabbit poop is awesome.
It's like the best.
Yeah.
It really, really is the best.
Yeah.
That and duck poop. So the thing about the standard model of housing is that you could easily have a rabbit operation in a one-car garage. So many people do this. I think it's the coolest thing because you're utilizing a suburban garage for this constant meat supply. And I mean constant meat supply. It's really doable for like a large scope of people. The other nice thing about rabbits is that they do it like rabbits. Get it? Get it? Bada-bing. Which, unlike broiler chickens, makes your protein source never-ending and completely sustainable. They really don't require much feed for like surviving either. You just need to give them enough hay that is their body size, so each day gets a little bit more. But look at the rabbit's size, grab that much hay and give it to them. Beautiful. Lastly, like chickens, you can easily process them on your own. No need for a processor. And on top of that, you can collect their waste and utilize it right away for your garden or sell their waste to others. This is a huge market.
Yeah, that's something I never remember about because we just use it so much. I would never sell compost or sell almost everything else. But that is super smart.
Mm-hmm. And then you're basically sustaining the rabbits, like they're paying for themselves at that point.
Exactly.
So it's something to look into. The lady that sells or composted manure here, she sells out every single year and she's been collecting all winter and can sell out. So
really,
that's really impressive.
Yeah.
So this is really treasured by gardeners, if you can't tell. And lastly, beef, lamb, goat, and pork. All of these are great options as well. We're just leaving them out for now because they require so much more. We just want to focus on like a small, tiny homestead for today. And those options need land, infrastructure, trailers, trucks, processors. It's a whole ass thing. And if you have these things, by all means, we support that because we ourselves have those things.
Totally. Yeah, the fact that they're not on our top recommendations doesn't mean that they're not good.
Right.
If you had like all the time in the world and aspiration, what would you, do you think, do you have one that you would pick? Like something to add to your current operation?
So the chickens are new to me, but I definitely think we'll keep doing that because yeah. I can't even stomach other chicken. I can stomach this chicken.
Yeah.
So I think I'll just stick with that. It's really, really easy to do, especially in the summer. It really gets you out to maybe a spot in your property that you're not used to being at,
yeah.
which I really like. So I think we'll definitely stick with that because processing is not that cumbersome to do.
Right.
What about you?
Easy. Well, like in a hypothetical world, one thing I would think would be very cool, although I don't anticipate us doing this potentially ever, but I love watching and learning about it, is the big aquaponic systems.
Oh yeah.
That people just have like in their shop or in their basement or whatever. It's, really cool. It's like a whole tank of tilapia you could just go harvest and eat, you know?
Yeah. That is really cool.
Yeah, cool. Probably not in the realm of what we would ever be doing in our lives, but
shrimp.
I have never even heard about shrimp. So now I'm
Wyoming shrimp. You can start your own business. Yeah. Seriously. That thing about that guy that's local to me, he started it because people like that are brilliant to start that.
Yeah.
Just in his own garage. In his own garage.
That's what I mean. Like that's what's cool about it.
And then a $1 billion company invested in it and now they're building a whole place because they're like, dang, this guy's so smart. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Shrimp though. How crazy.
Yeah, it's a big thing. Montana shrimp. You used to be able to go and collect your own out of these little... They were literally... When I tell you they're just like plastic swimming pools, like deep ones, that's what they were. They're just those ones that you buy at Walmart.
Yeah.
So you just got to be creative. That's what I do. You can do
it. Totally.
So all of our sources will be in the show notes. If you don't know what those are, click and it's the writing stuff that Stephanie does.
Sometimes
in the episode, and we appreciate you.
Thanks for listening.
Happy milking.
Happy milking.